Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. La Mesa's City Council is facing criticism for a lack of transparency and violating city rules in a recent appointment to the Community Police Oversight Commission. Protesters held a rally outside Republican Congressman Daryl Issa's office Friday, calling on him to hold a town hall meeting for constituents to air their concerns over actions of the Trump administration and Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. California News Service reports on town hall efforts statewide to fight for health care issues with congressional Republicans. The County of San Diego is upgrading a safe parking site for homeless people living in their vehicles in El Cajon and has an update on services currently available through a safe parking area in Spring Valley. Former Councilmember Liana LeBaron was arrested for disrupting a Lemon Grove City Council meeting last week, at which she called for council members to let the public know their views on a tiny homes project for the homeless being planned by the county in Lemon Grove. State Senator Brian Jones has introduced a bill he says takes aim at super sanctuary cities such as San Diego that have tried to defy state law and refuse to cooperate with federal immigration officials over convicted criminals. On Crime Beat, a Spring Valley father has been arrested for the murder of his newborn son, and the sheriff is asking public help to locate a woman suspected of murdering her spouse, a Cal Fire captain in Ramona. The county has broken ground on a new library in Casa de Oro, and we'll have the tales on our show today. East County Magazine has been named among the top magazine sites in San Diego County by FeedSpot. Find out why on our show today. We'll have tips for protecting your home from wildfires from California News Service today, plus a report from Cal Matters on the State Insurance Commissioner Lara rejecting State Farm's request to raise homeowner insurance rates again. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been confirmed to head up the Health and Human Services Agency despite his anti-vaccine stances. We'll have a special report today on some of his early actions as the department's secretary, including eliminating a flu vaccine campaign, firing workers in charge of preventing future epidemics, and pledging to eliminate some chemicals in our foods. Aromas of India, a new restaurant in La Mesa, drew over 1,000 people to its grand opening recently, and we'll have details. California Attorney General Rob Bonta has announced an injunction to prevent DOGE from accessing private data through Treasury Department records. Grossmont Union High School District is drawing criticism for creating a chief of staff position after firing many teachers. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories today, including how some agency heads are defying orders from DOGE, advocates speaking out for immigrant children, the anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a lawsuit filed to halt offshore oil drilling, and some fired federal employees returning to work. And finally, from California News Service, hear about threats to national monuments in California as the Trump administration seeks to open up these national treasures for mining and oil drilling. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Citizens of La Mesa are speaking out about the appointment of retired battalion chief Dave Hardenberger to the Community Police Oversight Board. On January 28th, without the proper notice and ignoring eligibility requirements, the City Council voted 5-0 to place him on the oversight body. Maris Ryan admonished the council in written public comment, "You have flaunted, dodged, and disrespected the rules set forth by the Community Police Oversight Board that is in place to serve your community. Shame on you." According to California Government Code, the council is prohibited from appointing new members to boards without first providing notice for at least 10 days, presumably to allow others to apply. Following this rule can prevent the appearance of collusion. That's when agreements are allegedly made outside of the prescribed official process, which, whether actually true or only having the appearance of being true, can have the same effect. After the appointment of Chief Hardenberger, the City Council met on February 11th for its bi-monthly, regularly scheduled council meeting. In public comments, Andy, who did not give his last name, told the council, "The city of La Mesa is starting to get the appearance that they're hand-selecting people for the oversight board. There are people that are showing up here who don't even come to an interview, and they're getting selected," he continued. "This has happened more than once," he claimed. "What does that say about us as a community?" But it's not just the appearance of collusion that has drawn attention to the appointment. Also at issue is Chief Hardenberger's recent retirement as fire captain for the city of La Mesa and his role as battalion chief. The city's statute that outlines the requirements for placement on the police oversight board restricts public safety officers from appointment to the board for 5 years after they've left public service in that role. According to Chief Hardenberger's social media accounts, he reports retiring as fire captain in 2023 and is also listed as an active battalion chief. Either would make him ineligible, according to the La Mesa City Municipal Code. East County Magazine reached out to Mayor Mark Arepistathis and City Attorney Glenn Sabine for comment, but neither returned email or phone calls. The outrage of the council's move appeared widespread. Long-standing citizen activist Gene Carpenter spoke on the issue, visibly upset, from the podium Tuesday. "I want to thank you, Mayor, and you, Patricia Dillard, assistant mayor, for not doing your job," he rebuked them both pointedly. Mayor Arepistathis and assistant mayor Dillard made up the subcommittee which put forth the recommendations for the council to vote for appointments to the board on January 28th. The pair did not pass along an application from Janet Castaños, who co-founded the Community Police Oversight Board and has previously acted as both chair and vice chair since 2021. Even the other city council members seemed surprised when the nomination of Hardenberger was announced. Newly elected city council member Lauren Casares, before voting to approve the appointment, expressed her bewilderment. Councilmember Casares said she was not previously aware that there were two nominations. She praised Castaños as an asset to that board, but then voted for Hardenberger, the only name put forward to the council. Castaños, in an email to supporters, raised these objections. "I was designated by the Helix Charter High School administration to serve as their representative. The newly selected member was not. I submitted all the necessary paperwork and letters from the high school administration by the imposed deadline. The newly selected member did not." She added, "The Helix High administration did not know of the newly selected member's application, nor did they send any letter identifying this person as their designee on the CPOB. Neither Arepistathis nor Dillard has offered any explanation for why they rejected Castaño's application, nor why they allowed Hardenberger to apply after the deadline without publicly announcing an extension of the application period." Reporting for East County Magazine, in La Mesa, this is John Tidwell.
Around 100 protesters held a rally outside Republican Congressman Daryl Issa's Escondido office on Friday, February 21st. Protesters from Escondido, Julian, Ramona, and other constituent communities demanded Issa hold an in-person town hall meeting. The protesters want to address critical issues facing the community, including the urgent need for transparency and accountability from elected officials. Activists want Issa to stand firm against what they call the illegal dismantling of federal agencies orchestrated by Elon Musk. But so far, Issa, San Diego County's only Republican congressional member, has been a staunch supporter of President Donald Trump. Pam Alberger, a spokesperson for Indivisible North County San Diego, says Congressman Issa has a responsibility to represent the voices of his constituents, and that includes holding town hall meetings where we can express our concerns. "We are here to demand that he stand up against the reckless actions that undermine our government and its agencies," she concludes. But so far, the group has not received a response from Congressman Issa as of our show taping deadline.
Town hall meetings start across California, pushing back against congressional Republicans' proposal to cut hundreds of billions of dollars from health care programs for low-income families. Organizers from the Fight for Our Health Coalition are sponsoring town halls targeting U.S. Representatives David Valadeo in the Central Valley, Young Kim in Orange County, and Ken Calvert in the Inland Empire. Rachel Lynn Gish with Health Access California says all three lawmakers have turned down an invitation to face constituents at the town hall meetings.
It's very hard for people to make ends meet right now. Do these Congress members really want to be the ones to vote to raise health care costs on families in their district on top of everything else? Because that's exactly what will happen.
Republicans on the House Budget Committee have been tasked with finding $2 trillion in cuts to federal spending in order to extend the 2017 Trump tax cuts, which critics say have primarily benefited wealthy people and big business. It's estimated some $880 billion in cuts would likely come from Medicaid, known as Medi-Cal in California. Gish says that would lead to a loss in coverage for millions, plus layoffs, longer wait times, and possible closures of community clinics and hospitals that rely on Medicaid funding. Gish warns if the cuts go through, California would be forced to slash its budget as well, with cuts and layoffs across the board.
One-fifth of our state budget is federal funding through Medi-Cal. Medi-Cal alone is 60% federally funded. There is no way that California would be able to make up any loss of the magnitude like they're talking about in Congress in our state budget.
The Fight for Our Health Coalition includes 50 groups that advocate for a wide range of issues for just about every demographic group in the state. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The county-run Safe Parking site on Magnolia in unincorporated El Cajon, one of two East County sites set up to help homeless people living in their vehicles, is temporarily closed for renovations. The improvements will include picnic and meeting areas, a dog run, improved bath and shower areas, and permanent structures to house staff offices. The site is anticipated to reopen in summer 2025, says Fernando Lopez with San Diego County's Health and Human Services Agency. People experiencing homelessness in their vehicles are currently being served at the Bancroft Safe Parking site located in Spring Valley. The El Cajon site opened in 2022 and Bancroft in 2024. It has space for 27 cars to park overnight starting at 5 p.m. The site has security along with clean restrooms, hot showers, a small kitchen, and a dog run for people with pets. Dinner and breakfast are provided. The lot is operated by county contractor Dreams for Change. Those in the program are also paired with a Dreams for Change caseworker to help them find housing options. Keely and Henry drove their black sedan onto the county's Bancroft Safe Parking site in Spring Valley in January, and since then, they say they've been able to breathe a sigh of relief. The couple spent months staying at various shelters or sleeping in their car on the side of the road after increased rent and a job loss forced them out of their long-term rental apartment and into their vehicle. Keely explains, "No matter how we tried to keep our boat afloat, it was impossible." She says being at Bancroft Safe Parking makes a whole world of difference to know that at 5 o'clock, we can come here, get a shower, there's a heater, there's coffee, oatmeal for the morning. It's a relief. Gilly and Henry were referred to Bancroft Safe Parking by a County Office of Homeless Solutions outreach worker. Dejana Beck, director of the County Office of Homeless Solutions, says safe parking lots provide people with a place to park and sleep for the night without the risk of being towed or asked to move. Participants also have support to get things like documents in order, reunifying with family, and, of course, finding a more permanent housing solution. The goal is to help the families, couples, and other people find more stable housing. Pets are also welcome. On average, residents stay at Bancroft Safe Parking between 3 to 6 months. For Gillian Henry, their wait is over as they move into a studio apartment thanks to support from the program. The county's Bancroft and Magnolia Safe Parking sites are part of the county's broader efforts to expand emergency housing options for people experiencing homelessness in the unincorporated communities. Next up, the county aims to open Troy Street sleeping cabins in Lemon Grove in 2026, though that project has faced community opposition. You can learn more about programs and resources by Googling Office of Homeless Solutions on the San Diego County website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
During public comments at the February 18th Lemon Grove City Council meeting, former council member Liana LeBaron urged members to agendize a discussion on 70 tiny homes for the homeless that the county plans to build. County supervisors approved building the project on Troy Street in Lemon Grove before holding any public discussion, angering many residents. For months, members of the public have clamored for Lemon Grove City Council to put the tiny homes on the agenda for discussion and a vote. So during public comments, LeBaron stated, "Our community wants to be heard. They want you to take action on their behalf." City Manager Lydia Romero then announced that she was finally able to get a commitment from the county staffers to come to a March 4th meeting and give a presentation, including staff involved in both design and operations of the Tiny Homes project. The public meeting will be held at Alvarez Auditorium to accommodate a crowd. Mayor Allison Snow told the audience, "We wanted it done much sooner," adding that it took time to find a large enough space. LeBaron then shouted from the audience, "Most important, we want to know what our city's position is on it." The mayor warned LeBaron not to interrupt the meeting, or she would have to leave. LeBaron stated, "I am not leaving the meeting." A man in the audience also disrupted the meeting, and both were told to leave. Sheriffs escorted LeBaron out of the room as she objected, "Take your hands off me." Outside, she was later arrested briefly and cited for disrupting the meeting, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. The misdemeanor offense is punishable by a fine of up to $400 or up to 90 days in jail, or both. LeBaron was previously arrested in 2022 when her husband accused her of domestic violence, and again in 2024 when he accused her of violating a restraining order. After Tuesday's meeting, Mayor Snow told the Union Tribune that it was not her intent to have LeBaron arrested, however, but merely to assure that she left the room. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
State Senator Brian Jones, a Republican from Santee, has introduced a bill that would amend SB 54, the state law limiting local law enforcement's cooperation with federal immigration authorities. Currently, SB 54 allows cities to turn over only undocumented immigrants convicted of certain violent offenses, but does not require that cities do so. Jones' measure, Senate Bill 554, the Safety Before Criminal Sanctuary Act, would prevent local jurisdictions from restricting cooperation with ICE beyond what the state law allows. In addition, Jones' bill would make it mandatory for cities and counties to turn over undocumented immigrants who have been convicted of the felonies listed in SB 54. Jones, who is State Senate Minority Leader, says the bill ensures violent criminals are not shielded from federal immigration authorities, using every tool in the toolbox to keep our communities safe. Specifically, the crimes listed in SB 54 include child abuse, unlawful weapon possession or use, driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs, trafficking controlled substances, rape, kidnapping, torture, murder, gang activity, arson, and those on the sex offender registry. Jones says his bill is in response to a recent San Diego County ordinance passed by supervisors that bans local law enforcement from cooperating with ICE for any offense, even those exempted under SB 54, unless a federal warrant is issued. Former Chairwoman Nora Vargas said at the time that the policy was intended to ensure local resources are focused on addressing the county's most urgent needs while protecting families and promoting community trust. San Diego County Sheriff Kelly Martinez, however, later stated that her department will follow state law, making the supervisor's action ineffective. At a press conference announcing Jones' bill, he was joined by Supervisors Jim Desmond and Joel Anderson, as well as Congressman Daryl Issa, all Republicans who support the bill. Supervisor Desmond said the current sanctuary state law ties the hands of local law enforcement. He added that he will be asking his colleagues on the Board of Supervisors to support Jones' bill. Jones's measure, SB 554, is awaiting assignment to a Senate Policy Committee for hearing. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. 22-year-old David Ruiz has been arrested by sheriff's deputies on February 19th for the murder of his newborn son. Firefighters and sheriff's deputies responded to a report of battery at the family's Spring Valley home on Sacramento Avenue. San Miguel firefighters arrived first and found the newborn boy unconscious on the living room floor, suffering obvious trauma to his head. Tragically, the baby was pronounced dead at the scene, says Lieutenant Michael Krug. Sheriff's homicide investigators are working to get more information, including the motive for the tragic homicide. Anyone with information is asked to call the homicide unit at 858-285-6330, or after hours, you can call 858-868-3200. You can also remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. The Sheriff's Office is asking public help to locate Yolanda Marodi, also known as Yolanda Olejnisak, who is suspected in the stabbing death of her wife, CAL FIRE Captain Rebecca Marodi. The couple had been married for approximately 2 years. The suspect previously served time in prison for killing her first spouse, James Joseph Olejnisak, with a knife in San Bernardino County. She pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter in 2003 and was imprisoned from February 2004 until November 2013, 10 News reports. Rebecca Marodi served over 30 years with CAL FIRE, including Riverside, San Bernardino, and San Diego counties. On February 17th, sheriff's deputies responded to a report of an assault at the couple's Ramona home on Rancho Villa Road. First responders found the victim, who had suffered multiple stab wounds. Despite life-saving efforts by deputies and paramedics, she was pronounced dead at the scene. The suspect is described as 5'2" tall, weighing 166 pounds with brown hair. Olejnisak is believed to be driving a silver 2013 Chevrolet Equinox with California license plate 8BQJ420. She is traveling with a small white dog. At this time, her whereabouts are not known. Out of an abundance of caution, the sheriff's office has alerted authorities on both sides of the border about the suspect. If you have any information for law enforcement on her whereabouts, please reach out to the homicide unit at 858-285-6330 or call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. A tribute from CAL FIRE San Diego says Captain Marodi dedicated more than 3 decades to serving and protecting our communities with unwavering bravery, leadership, and commitment. According to the Post, she was caregiving for her 77-year-old mother who lived with her in Ramona. The CAL FIRE San Diego Benevolent Fund is asking for donations to cover continuing care for Marodi's mother as well as funeral expenses. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
County officials and community members broke ground last week on a new library branch in Casa de Oro to meet the growing needs of the community. The new library will be located on Campbell Road in Spring Valley, near Spring Valley Academy. At 12,000 square feet, the new library will be twice as large as the current library, which is in a leased location. The facility will also include a 2,000 square foot community room. Other features of the new library will include public computers plus laptops for checkout, high-speed internet access and Wi-Fi throughout the branch, after-hours access for community events, a teen area with study rooms, a children's area with early literacy play equipment, patio space, and a Friends of the Library bookstore, and a designated parking lot. The library is being built on zero net energy and LEED gold standards. This means that the library's solar panels will produce the electricity it needs to operate. The county gathered community input and engaged residents, businesses, and other stakeholders about their needs for the library. This feedback helped to shape the design and types of features planned for this location. The project is funded by the County of San Diego. The new library branch is expected to open in spring of 2026. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
East County Magazine has been selected by FeedSpot as the 5th best local magazine among the top 15 San Diego magazines on the web. The site ranks the best San Diego magazines from thousands on the web, ranked by relevancy, authority, social media followers, and freshness. East County Magazine was established in 2008 and now averages 10 million hits and 250,000 visits each month. The site has won 147 major journalism awards. Its mission is to provide in-depth news, views, and events coverage daily for the inland areas in San Diego County, reflecting the broad diversity of people and issues in our region, especially those underrepresented in other media. You can visit East County Magazine at eastcountymagazine.org, donate to support our journalism, and subscribe to our newsletter and our wildfire and emergency alerts at eastcountymagazine.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The final numbers from January's wildfires in Southern California were jaw-dropping. At least 29 dead, 200,000 people evacuated, and more than 18,000 structures destroyed. As rebuilding begins, experts say there are steps homeowners and urban planners should take to minimize the destruction from future fires. Nick Link with the National Center for Ecological Analysis and Synthesis says communities should see rebuilding as an opportunity to avoid past mistakes.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Rather than writing a blank check, which we're going to have to start doing more and more often for more and more communities, what if we invested a little bit up front and created more of the space? And that's something that land managers have been advocating for a long time.
Link says communities should incorporate fire smart strategies and infrastructure, require vegetation-free buffers or fire breaks, mandate fire-resistant building materials such as double-pane windows, and offer incentives to owners who rebuild using these strategies. Planners say preventing flying embers from drifting into vulnerable openings in a home can prevent the structure from being destroyed. Alexandra Sifford with the Conservation Biology Institute says in fires like those in the Los Angeles area, homes tended to burn from the inside out.
They send in a wind gust or 70, 80 miles an hour, and these little tiny millions of little embers are flying through the air that can jump 10-lane freeways. Whatever those little embers land on or can get into is the big reason that people lose their houses in fire.
Link adds the beauty of living in wooded areas can also be the most significant danger.
You can see in a wildfire like the one that burned through LA, they don't know who from who. It's a wildfire coming through. It doesn't matter who you are, what you think, how you feel. This is a problem that we're all going to face, and it'll become a bigger issue both as the climate warms up and as we continue to expand into that wild and urban interface.
For California News Service, I'm Mark Richardson. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
California Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara has rejected State Farm's request for emergency rate increases after the Los Angeles fires, setting up what could be a highly consequential showdown with the state's biggest insurer and going against the recommendation of his staff experts, CalMatters reports. Lara, who has been urging insurance companies to write policies in the state again despite increasing wildfire risks, says in a letter to State Farm executives that he needs more information before he can approve an increase. He wants them to appear before him in person on February 26th at the insurance department's office in Oakland to answer his questions at an informal conference. In his letter, Lara says, the burden is on State Farm to demonstrate that interim relief is warranted under the circumstances, adding that his goal is to make sure policyholders do not have to pay more than is required. In light of the recent LA wildfires, he adds, State Farm's customers need real answers about why they are being asked to pay more and what responsibility the company's leadership is taking to get its financial house in order. State Farm says in a written statement that it must seriously consider its options within the California insurance market going forward. The company voiced disappointment in Commissioner Lara's letter and said State Farm has gone to great lengths to answer his questions. The company recently asked for interim rate increases averaging 22% for homeowners statewide, plus a 15% rate hike for renters and 38% for condo owners. The company says it has paid out $1 billion in claims from the LA County fires so far and expects to pay out significantly more. It wanted to be able to raise premiums starting in May. Before making the interim request, State Farm had been waiting for the insurance department to approve its rate increase request from last year. Lara acknowledged in the letter that his staff recommended he approve the company's request, but says, my primary responsibility is to the people of California. In his letter, Lara asks what else the company is doing to improve its financial situation besides raising rates, and whether State Farm's parent company might be able to step in and help. The commissioner also asked how granting the company its request would affect its 2023 decision to continue not writing new policies in California, which was followed by its decision last year not to renew policies of tens of thousands of customers in California. Lara says in the letter that with his department's approval, the company received rate increases of 6.9%, 6.9%, and 20%, respectively, in 2022, 2023, and 2024. He asks, in the absence of non-wildfire catastrophic losses in 2022 and 2023, how does State Farm explain the significant decrease in its policyholder surplus? Dan Kraus, chief executive of State Farm General, the California arm of State Farm, said in a letter to Lara on February 3rd that the company has nearly 3 million policies in our state, including 1 million homeowner policies. He asked for the commissioner to bypass the usual hearings, which are required by state law when an insurer requests rates increases above 7%, and the increases have been challenged by an intervener. Kraus wrote that there is simply too much at stake for customers and the broader market if any rate increase has to wait on a full hearing or other resolution in the normal course. The meeting in which Lara is asking State Farm executives to appear in person will also include Consumer Watchdog, the group that intervened last year when the company filed its rate requests. Consumer Watchdog has urged the commissioner to reject State Farm's request for the interim rate increases. In a press release, the group accuses the company of misleading policyholders into believing its financial condition is at risk. The consumer advocacy group had a mixed reaction to the commissioner's action, saying he needs to follow the law and hold a public rate hearing. Pam Presley, an attorney for Consumer Watchdog, says the commissioner is right to call for more scrutiny of State Farm, which has so far stonewalled information requests. However, the outstanding issues need to be raised and answered in a formal hearing, which Consumer Watchdog has called for, where there is formal discovery and due process rights. Still, the group does plan to attend Lara's meeting February 26, Consumer Watchdog President Jamie Court told CalMatters. Mitchell Soller, insurance department spokesperson, says a public rate hearing is necessary only when parties involved do not reach a settlement, and that Consumer Watchdog participates in these private discussions whenever it intervenes in a rate review. Joel Lotcher, former chief deputy commissioner at the insurance department, who is now a program specialist at the consumer advocacy group United Policyholders, told CalMatters, "We don't want to contemplate the possibility that State Farm will exit the California market. That would create a significant void in the availability of homeowners' coverage," Loucher says, noting that State Farm has about 20% of the state's market or did at the end of 2023. Loucher also says it may be in State Farm's best interest to accept the 6.9% increase, which is under the 7% threshold, and would avoid the intervener process and possible hearing under state law, but then it could immediately apply for another increase. Property owners in California have struggled with insurance availability and affordability in the past several years as companies have either stopped renewing policies or writing new ones, citing wildfire risk and inflation. Many homeowners have had to turn to the FAIR Plan, a coverage pool funded by insurance companies operating in California that's required by law to provide fire insurance to those who can't otherwise find it, the insurer of last resort. Earlier this year, Commissioner Lara approved a $1 billion lifeline sought by the FAIR Plan, which said it risked running out of money to operate as it pays out claims for the L.A. area wildfires. Its member companies will be responsible for that amount and are expected to take advantage of their new ability to try to recoup half of that money from their customers by charging them a one-time fee. Last year, Commissioner Lara rolled out a multi-part effort to address insurance availability in the state. It took effect at the beginning of 2025. Right before the Los Angeles area wildfires. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
The Senate has confirmed anti-vaccine activist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the U.S. Health and Human Services Department on a party-line vote, with Mitch McConnell the only Republican voting against the controversial appointee opposed by every Democratic senator. As Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kennedy oversees a budget of nearly $2 trillion and a staff of 90,000 federal employees with control of other critical health programs under the fold of HHS, such as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Centers for Disease Control. control. Now at the helm of the nation's largest public health agency, Kennedy is implementing major changes to remedy what he views as sources of chronic disease. But healthcare professionals are raising concerns over some of Kennedy's early actions, including ending a flu vaccine campaign and laying off employees in charge of investigating potential public health threats to ward off future epidemics. Hours after Kennedy pledged to senators that the Department of Health and Human Services would not undergo a staff purge, the Trump administration laid off half of its Epidemic Intelligence Service. The layoff affects over 1,200 staff members, NBC reports. Top-ranking officials with the Centers for Disease Control told CBS that the cuts would have a devastating effect on the country's ability to assess blooming diseases like bird flu, currently an epidemic. Dr. Anne Shushat, an alumna of the disease research program, says the country is less safe, adding, these are the deployable assets critical for investigating new threats from anthrax to Zika. For years, Kennedy has cast doubt on the safety and efficacy of vaccines and spread misinformation linking vaccines to autism. During his Senate confirmation hearings, he promised he would not change the nation's current vaccination schedule. But, speaking for the first time to thousands of U.S. Health and Human Services Agency employees, he vowed to investigate the childhood vaccine schedule that prevents measles, polio, and other dangerous diseases, adding nothing is going to be off limits. The statement comes against the backdrop of a measles outbreak in Texas and a resurgence of polio in several nations. Kennedy also pledged to have Health and Human Services investigate potential contributors to chronic disease, including antidepressant drugs, ultra-processed foods, electromagnetic radiation, and glyphosate pesticides found in some foods. Kennedy himself has been accused of conflicts of interest, since as an attorney and head of Children's Defense Fund, he has profited off anti-vaccination lawsuits. But he told employees, we will remove conflicts of interest from the committees and research partners whenever possible, or balance them with other stakeholders. Kennedy's Make America Healthy Again campaign is based on the belief that chronic diseases are in part driven by additives in food and pollution in the environment. He has also pledged to combat rising obesity rates and work with the Department of Agriculture to eradicate ultra-processed foods from the American market, including removing junk foods from SNAP benefits. Under Kennedy's watch, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, is stopping a successful flu vaccination campaign that aimed to communicate that the flu vaccination can lessen symptoms and the chance of getting severely ill, even if it doesn't prevent somebody from catching the flu entirely. The website for the campaign has been taken offline. The successful campaign boosted vaccination rates and was set up in response to failing flu vaccine rates since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. It targeted groups at higher risk, especially pregnant women and children. The Trump administration's decision to pull the campaign comes in the midst of a brutal flu season that's still raging. Over 50,000 patients were admitted to hospitals for influenza during the week that ended February 8th, the highest level in 15 years. Del Bigtree, who leads a group promoting Kennedy's Make America Healthy Again movement, has dismissed widely replicated studies finding no link to autism from vaccines because he alleges they were conducted by scientists who wanted to find that result. Bigtree claims, without evidence, that the HHS has long approved poisons produced by industry for public consumption. He has urged Kennedy to root out corporate influence and to review employees' histories to see if they worked for industry, also vetting their views about causes of chronic disease. But California Senator Alex Padilla spoke against Kennedy's confirmation due to what Padilla called Kennedy's wildly misinformed beliefs and his utter lack of experience, including spreading dangerous conspiracy theories, stating there is no vaccine that is safe and effective, and making false accusations that vaccines cause autism and that COVID-19 targets specific racial and ethnic groups. Padilla, a co-founder of the bipartisan Senate Mental Health Caucus, also highlighted the dangers Kennedy poses to mental health care access and Medicaid benefits. He slammed Kennedy for his dangerous lack of knowledge regarding Medicaid funding and benefits revealed through Senate questioning. Padilla made clear, I believe he is fundamentally unfit and unprepared, and Americans will be less healthy if he is confirmed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a local business report. The owner of Aromas of India Bar and Grill made history in La Mesa at the February 5th grand opening of his restaurant on Baltimore Drive. Dinesh Shah and his staff offered complimentary dinners to the public and La Mesa Chamber of Commerce guests for 3 hours, generating over 1,000 reservations and people lining up around the block to savor the cuisine. The wait did not dampen the mood of the guests, who savored dishes such as chicken tikka masala, vegetable samosas, and curry. While guests waited outside to take their turn at the buffet tables, Indian dancers provided entertainment. Inside the restaurant, while dining, guests were entertained by jazz musicians. Mary England said the crowd set all-time records for a chamber grand opening of a new business, praising the business owner. "We are grateful for his investment in La Mesa and for providing jobs, a great menu for locals and visitors, and for stimulating our local economy," England said. Honored guests included local politicians as well as the Honorary Consul General of Nepal. The motto of Aromas of India Bar and Grill, which also offers catering, is "Dine like royalty." You can check out their menu on their website at aromaslamesa.com.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta announced that the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York has issued a preliminary injunction blocking the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing Americans' personal and private information maintained by the U.S. Treasury Department. Attorney General Bonta says, "We are pleased the court granted our request to further halt the Elon Musk-led DOGE from accessing millions of Americans' private and sensitive data. Californians can breathe a sigh of relief knowing the California Department of Justice is going to the mat for them and standing up against the Trump administration's chilling overreach of power." On February 7th, Attorney General Bonta joined a coalition of 19 attorneys general in filing a lawsuit seeking to block DOGE from accessing sensitive Treasury Department material, including millions of Americans' bank account and Social Security numbers. Hours after filing the lawsuit, the court responded by granting a temporary restraining order barring DOGE's access to the Treasury Department's payment systems and information. The latest preliminary injunction keeps those restrictions in place, pending any further order of the court. Since Inauguration Day, DOGE has infiltrated executive agencies with the goal of eliminating federal funding, services, and personnel. Starting last month, there were reports of billionaire Elon Musk and his DOGE associates gaining an unprecedented level of access to vital payment systems of the U.S. Treasury. The Treasury Department payment systems, managed by the Bureau of Fiscal Services, or BFS, are responsible for trillions of dollars in U.S. government payment. Millions of Americans rely on this support from these payments for services like health care, child care, and other essential programs, including Social Security benefits, Medicare, veterans benefits, salaries for federal employees, and tax refunds. Given their critical importance to U.S. government operations, these systems have been highly regulated and tightly guarded in the past. But with the election of Donald Trump, they are no longer safe, the attorneys general contend. In their complaint, the attorneys general allege that the Trump administration has no constitutional, statutory, or regulatory authority to widen access to the payment system for political appointees or special government employees, including members of DOGE. Specifically, the court has temporarily prohibited DOGE from being granted access to any Treasury Department records containing personally identifiable or confidential financial information. The Department of the Treasury must also submit a report to the court by March 24th, certifying that DOGE team members have received all training typically required of individuals granted access to the Bureau of Fiscal Services payment systems containing personal data, such as tax return info and sensitive financial data. In addition, the judge is asking for certification on the vetting process for DOGE team members and how that compares to career employees previously allowed access to this system. Judge Jeanette Vargas writes, "The public interest is plainly served by requiring the Treasury Department to ensure to the maximum extent possible the security of these systems and the information contained therein." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is John Tidwell with an education report from East County Magazine. Teachers, parents, and community members leveled sharp criticism of the Grossmont Union High School District Board of Trustees during a special budget workshop meeting on February 6th. Numerous speakers objected to the board's creation of a costly new chief of staff position and waiving of board policies to do so, after the board majority earlier voted to lay off numerous employees, including many teachers. James Messina, president of the Grossmont Education Association, or GEA, the district's teachers union, asked, "What are we doing here?" He listed all laws and policies that the board would break if it approved creating the new position without following proper procedures. He said the district used to be the envy of the county, but that this board is ruining their reputation. In a letter to GEA members, Messina said he hoped the district would want to get the best possible candidate for this position, but that the board seemed more concerned with filling this new position as soon as possible. The position was not announced in EdJoin for prospective applicants to see, so there were no applications to screen and no finalists sent to the superintendent for interviews. Skipping these steps removed all transparency and go against past practice, as well as the district's governing board, bylaws, and board policies, the union leaders said. Other speakers included parents, teachers, and community members who criticized the board for adding a new salaried position and planning to make an appointment without going through the process of vetting, interviews, or the proper hiring processes. Matthew Norris emphasized an undermining of trust. Gavin Preston accused board members of manufacturing an emergency. Bonnie Price said the board trustees are degrading the quality of education in her district. Speakers from Monte Vista and Granite Hills High Schools illustrated that the board fired a number of people last year, including at least 10 teachers, stating that the budget required it. The board also terminated the district's director of school safety. Yet now, the board aims to spend money to hire a chief of staff who is essentially taking on the role of some of the fired individuals. Multiple speakers accused board members of either sidestepping the legal process or downright ignoring it. Only two board members addressed concerns raised by speakers. Trustee Jim Kelly stated, "I'm sure everyone's minds are made up, and speaking as a 32-year board member, I can tell that this position is needed." But Trustee Chris Feit said hiring the chief of staff in this manner would undermine the public trust. "We don't need this position," Feit concluded, "and this is not the way we should be doing business." Despite strong opposition, the board voted 4-1 in favor of creating the new chief of staff position, with trustees Jim Kelly, Robert Shield, Scott Eckert, and Gary Woods voting in favor, and Chris Feit voting no.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Next up, we're going to bring you some national news headline stories from Public News Service and 2025 Talks.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, February the 24th, 2025. I'm Mike Clifford. Several Trump-appointed agency leaders urged federal workers not to comply with Elon Musk's order to summarize their accomplishments for the past week or be removed from their position, even as Musk doubled down on his demand over the weekend. That for the New York Times. They report their instructions in effect countermanded the order of Musk across much of the government, challenging the broad authority President Trump has given to the world's richest man to make drastic changes to the federal bureaucracy. The Times notes the standoff serves as one of the most significant tests of how far Elon Musk's power will extend. Next to California, a state that is bracing for large-scale immigration raids, and groups that advocate for kids are speaking out against the climate of fear.
Recently, an 11-year-old girl in Texas committed suicide after allegedly being bullied about her family's immigration status. Myra Alvarez, president of the Children's Partnership, says the sense of dread that a parent might be deported is extremely stressful and can lead to physical illness.
That day-to-day worrying, that leads to a host of health issues. Everything from increased anxiety and depression to stomach aches to behaviors that aren't reflective of who they are.
Almost half of California's 9 million children have at least one immigrant parent. One in 10 has an undocumented parent, and one in 5 lives in a mixed-status family. California legislators passed Assembly Bill 699 to protect immigrant students, but schools cannot block Immigration and Customs Enforcement from coming on campus if they have a court order. I'm Suzanne Potter.
And a coalition of environmental groups has filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration, challenging its revocations of President Joe Biden's protections for the 625 million acres of federal waters from offshore drilling.
The lawsuit filed in federal district court in Alaska argues the Trump administration's action is illegal and threatens coastal communities, ecosystems, and marine life. Christian Wagley, a coastal organizer with Healthy Gulf, emphasizes the importance of protecting Florida's coastline from drilling.
The water is clean, our beaches are clean, and Florida's economy really depends on that. That's kind of the quintessential experience in Florida is being able to go to the beach and have that clean white sand and that blue-green water. And that would be directly threatened by expanded oil and gas drilling in the Gulf of Mexico.
In his final days in office, the legal challenge focuses on Biden's decision to withdraw vast areas of the Outer Continental Shelf, including parts of the Atlantic, Pacific, Arctic, and Eastern Gulf of Mexico, from oil and gas leasing and drilling. President Trump argues that boosting fossil fuel production is essential to meeting energy demand and maintaining U.S. leadership in global energy markets. I'm Tramell Gomes.
This is Public News Service.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I've seen the reports in the last couple of days that say Vladimir Putin wants peace, but I have to say I'm skeptical because if he really wants peace, nothing is stopping him from calling off those missile and drone attacks, attacks that are not targeting just Ukraine's military, but that are targeting civilians.
Following a recent trip to Ukraine, New Hampshire Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen blames Russian President Vladimir Putin for the ongoing destruction and civilian deaths. Today marks the third anniversary of the full-scale invasion, which has killed at least 80,000 Ukrainians and turned 7 million people into refugees. President Donald Trump has blamed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for the war and calls him a dictator. But after the visit, moderate North Carolina Republican Tom Tillis bluntly called Putin a cancer and a threat. Many on the right are calling for an end to aid for Ukraine, and Trump says its continuation might depend on the U.S. getting the benefit of Ukrainian rare earth minerals. Speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference, he says he's working with Putin and Zelensky to end the war and get back money the Biden administration spent on it.
I'm trying to get the money back or secured because, you know, Europe has given $100 billion. The United States has given $350 billion because we had a stupid, incompetent president and administration.
By federal figures, the U.S. has, in fact, given about $200 billion in aid and loans. Combined, Europe has given about $150 billion. Meanwhile, some federal workers are returning to the office today after the White House ended telework agreements, but keeping up with the many executive orders can be challenging. Department of Government Efficiency Chair Elon Musk demanded federal employees outline 5 things that they accomplished in their job last week or be fired. Maya Sen with Harvard University's Kennedy School of Public Policy says some of it seems to be aimed at intimidation.
They're trying to signal, you need to rule in our favor because if you don't, we're going to potentially not comply with your rulings. And if we do that, that's going to be very damaging for you. And we just want to make it clear we're considering that. That's on the table.
Officials at the Pentagon and State Department have told employees at those agencies to ignore Musk's demands, saying job performance will be evaluated internally. This comes just as Trump has fired the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Navy's top admiral. Critics charge Trump as politicizing the traditionally nonpartisan armed forces. An environmental coalition is suing the Trump administration over its offshore drilling policy. The lawsuit argues revoking protections for more than 600 million acres of federal waters poses threats to coastal communities, marine ecosystems, fishing, and tourism. Much of that's in the Gulf, which also sees the most economic activity from oil and gas. But Christian Wagley with the group Healthy Gulf says fossil fuels do more damage than good.
Transitions are sticky and they're messy. And this action by President Biden that we're working to uphold is part of that long transition now away from the dirty energy and to the clean energy. So we want to maintain that and hold that line.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Groups that fight to protect public lands are criticizing the Trump administration's new review of all oil, gas, and mining on public lands. National monuments in California protect about 4 million acres of land. New U.S. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum has ordered a 15-day internal review of these sites, which conservation groups warn could be a first step toward altering their boundaries to allow fossil fuel and mineral extraction. And yet, Daniel Hart with the National Parks Conservation Association says this would do little to address the energy emergency recently declared by President Donald Trump.
The timeline from starting a lease sale until oil and gas is pumping and then refined and into the markets is a long time. It would not immediately do anything to lower gas prices.
In the past, Carrizo Plain National Monument on the Central Coast has been eyed for oil and gas development. Other national monuments in California whose boundaries could be reevaluated include the two newest, Chuckwalla and Satitla National Monuments, along with 13 others across the state. Hart says these public lands are crucial for wildlife habitat and recreation, and he points out they pump billions of dollars into the outdoor economy.
They protect both natural and cultural resources. They are a great place for our shared histories, but also they're the public benefit. They support the outdoor recreation economy, especially in rural states.
Across the U.S., 24 million acres of public land are already leased to oil and gas companies for fossil fuel extraction, with over 12 million acres under active drilling. The NPCA says key monuments outside of California that risk losing protections include Devil's Tower in Wyoming and the Dinosaur and Hovensweep National Monuments in Utah. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Groups that fight to protect public lands are criticizing the Trump administration's new review of all oil, gas, and mining on public lands. National monuments in California protect about 4 million acres of land. New U.S. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum has ordered a 15-day internal review of these sites, which conservation groups warn could be a first step toward altering their boundaries to allow fossil fuel and mineral extraction. And yet, Daniel Hart with the National Parks Conservation Association says this would do little to address the energy emergency recently declared by President Donald Trump.
The timeline from starting a lease sale until oil and gas is pumping and then refined and into the markets is a long time. It would not immediately do anything to lower gas prices.
In the past, Carrizo Plain National Monument on the Central Coast has been eyed for oil and gas development. Other national monuments in California whose boundaries could be reevaluated include the two newest, Chuckwalla and Satitla National Monuments, along with 13 others across the state. Hart says these public lands are crucial for wildlife habitat and recreation, and he points out they pump billions of dollars into the outdoor economy.
They protect both natural and cultural resources. They are a great place for our shared histories, but also they're the public benefit. They support the outdoor recreation economy, especially in rural states.
Across the U.S., 24 million acres of public land are already leased to oil and gas companies for fossil fuel extraction, with over 12 million acres under active drilling. The NPCA says key monuments outside of California that risk losing protections include Devil's Tower in Wyoming and the Dinosaur and Hovensweep National Monuments in Utah. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Radio Show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine Radio Show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.